Okay, our next item is item six, the Forest Practices Act Rule Enforcement Policy Review. In this case, we'll first hear from departmental staff. We will then have a couple of panels of stakeholders, and then we'll hear some public testimony on that. Again, the public testimony, as I indicated at the outset of the meeting, will have 30 minutes total. So we'll see what we have in terms of signups. So, Kyle, thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Chair Imeson, board members, Dave Forrester Doherty. For the record, again, I am Kyle Abraham, and I serve as the Private Forest Division Chief. Today, we've got a brief presentation for you on the petition to initiate rulemaking to identify and develop protection requirements for coho salmon resource sites. I'm accompanied by Thomas Whittington, our water quality specialist, and Josh Bernard, our field support unit manager. We're going to cover the policy and protection standards for fish streams. We're also going to touch on the Administrative Procedures Act and review the petition. We'll also describe the options the board may consider to either accept or deny the petition. The Board of Forestry's 2011 Forestry Program for Oregon supports an effective, science-based, and adaptive FPA as a cornerstone of forest protection on private lands in Oregon. The board's guiding principles and philosophies include a commitment to continuous learning, evaluating, and appropriately adjusting forest management policies and programs based upon ongoing monitoring, assessment, and research. The FPA provides a water quality protection standards on state and private forest land. This includes providing habitat for fish and wildlife. The FPA policy is that the leading use on private forest land is the growing and harvesting of trees, consistent with sound management of soil, air, water, fish and wildlife resources. There is a unique concentration of public resources values in and near waters of the state, because these areas are critical for the overall maintenance of fish and wildlife and for maintaining water quality. Consequently, the policies and practices of the Forest Practices Act include encouraging economically efficient forest practices, and these are best achieved by focusing protection measures in riparian management areas, where the emphasis is, again, on providing water quality and fish and wildlife habitat. The purpose of the water protection rules is to protect, maintain, and where appropriate, improve the functions and values of streams, lakes, wetlands, and riparian management areas. These functions and values include water quality, hydrologic function, growing and harvesting of trees, and fish and wildlife resources. The Forest Practices Act, as you know, also requires continual monitoring to ensure effectiveness of the water protection rules. Monitoring and evaluation of the water protection rules is a key component of the FPA and its innovative approach. The goal here is to increase the level of confidence of all concerned that the rules will maintain and improve the conditions of the riparian vegetation and waters of the state over time. I will, with that, turn it over to Thomas.
Good afternoon, Chair Imeson, board members, State Forester Doherty. For the record, my name is Thomas Whittington, water quality specialist for the Private Forest Division. I will be providing a brief overview of the key updates to the FPA, current rules, and water quality performance metrics concerning forest land stream protection. The stream site protection rules enacted in 1994 in the Forest Practices Act were the most comprehensive ever passed in the state. The rules were created after 3 years of considering science and policies pertaining to water protection and classification. The board was instructed to revise protection rules so that fish in all forested streams would be equally protected under the FPA. The Oregon Plan was enacted to promote and coordinate voluntary actions among private citizens, landowners, and organizations to help restore or enhance habitat for salmon species across the state. Measures and actions undertaken and funded by private forest landowners and watershed organizations extend beyond the requirements of the FPA and have been key to achieving the program's goals since its inception. 2007 brought additional updates to the stream classification process to allow foresters and others to use physical habitat characteristics rather than solely relying on fish counting results from electrofishing in order to better determine the fish use of particular streams, therefore enhancing protection of fish in their habitat. New rules became effective in July 2017 to increase vegetative buffer requirements for streams with salmon, steelhead, or bull trout use. These rules were developed in response to the board's finding of degradation of protection for the cold water criterion. These are the noted changes to the FPA, but there have been others that occur since 1994 that we do not have time to highlight during today's presentation, though. Additionally, the department continues work on stream-side protection reviews with the primary objective to assess the effectiveness of the FPA. Both the Siskiyou and Western Oregon stream-side reviews are agenda items for the September board meeting. The goal of the FPA is to maintain resource protection during forest operations adjacent to streams and water bodies by identifying and protecting the beneficial use, which includes designated fish species. The vegetative buffers are based on beneficial use and size of the stream to protect, maintain, and where appropriate, improve the functions and values of the riparian management areas. The road construction standards establish the standards for road location, drainage, design, and maintenance in order to protect water quality to the maximum practical protection. Between 2002 and 2003, two key changes were implemented, including wet weather haul rules for the purpose of minimizing delivery of fine sediment to streams and also avoiding roads in critical locations to effectively protect salmon habitat and water quality. Stream crossing structures must be installed and designed to meet fish passage to allow migration of adult and juvenile salmonids. The debris torrent stream rules provide for a source of large wood for fish streams from certain type in streams that are subject to rapidly moving landslides. Preliminary analysis of the statewide DEQ water quality index report for the 2018 water year shows 86% of the monitored forest stream sites had good to excellent water quality, with an increasing trend on 47% of those sites. For 9 out of 10 years, the monitored sites and forest land have met or exceeded the established target of 80% of sites reporting with good to excellent water quality. Oregon's land use planning system, and specifically Planning Goal 4, seek to maintain and protect working forest land around the state to allow for tree harvesting that is consistent with sound management of soil, air, water, fish, and wildlife resources. As of 2017, Oregon has retained 98% of non-federal acreage that was in forest or mixed farm forest land cover in the year of 1984. Private forest landowners continue to provide large investments in improving water quality and fish habitat across the state by continuing to contribute significantly to the Oregon Plan for Salmon Watersheds. As of 2018, the private forest landowners had contributed 70% of the total financial investment, which has helped exceed the cumulative investment goals for the program over the past 4 years. I will now turn the presentation over to Josh. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Good afternoon, Chair Imason, members of the board, State Forester Doherty. For the record, my name is Josh Bernard. I'm the Field Support Unit Manager for the Private Forest Division. And I'm going to walk through the Administrative Procedures Act today, some of the statutes relating to duties and powers of the board, and a slide on the petition and the options. So under the Administrative Procedures Act, any interested party may petition an agency to adopt, amend, or repeal an agency rule. When the board receives a petition, it has 90 days to accept or deny. If you deny it, you must do so in writing. The board has broad discretion in its decision-making to accept or deny, and the board is not bound by the proposed rule language in the petition. Through the rulemaking process, it may be decided that alternative language is more appropriate, or to close the rulemaking process without enacting any new rules or changing any existing rules. The petition must meet certain criteria. For example, it must include the name and address of the petitioner. For new rules, it must include language in full, including the facts or arguments in sufficient detail to show the reasons for and the effects of the adoption.
Josh, could you remind us where we are with respect to the 90-day period?
And actually, I have a note on that. So we are actually a couple days beyond the 90-day period, but the petitioners have granted us those extra couple days to make a decision. So we do not have to hold a special meeting to do that. So, yeah. So relating to this petition, ORS 527710 sub 3 relating to the duties and powers of the board states that in addition to its other rulemaking responsibilities, the board shall collect and analyze the best available information and establish inventories of the following resource sites needing protection. First, threatened and endangered fish and wildlife species identified on lists that are adopted by rule by the State Fish and Wildlife Commission or are federally listed under the Endangered Species Act. This also includes sensitive bird nesting, roosting, and watering sites, biological sites that are ecologically and scientifically significant, and significant wetlands. Subsection B says the board shall determine whether forest practices would conflict with resource sites in the inventories required by paragraph A. If the board determines that one or more forest practices would conflict with resource sites in the inventory, the board shall consider the consequences of the conflicting uses and determine appropriate levels of protection. Based upon the analysis required by paragraph B of this subsection and consistent with the policies of 527.630, which Kyle noted earlier, the board shall adopt rules appropriate to protect resource sites in the inventories required by paragraph A of this subsection. So now let's go over the petition. The petition was received on April 23rd, and as noted earlier, the board gets 90 days to make a decision, and in this case, we've been granted a few extra days by the petitioners to avoid holding that special meeting. The petitioners include 20 fishing and conservation industry or conservation organizations. And in the petition, the petitioners requested the Board of Forestry develop a rule designating resource sites on state and private forest lands for Oregon's coho salmon. The petition goes on to state the Oregon Forest Practices Act requires the board to collect and analyze the best available information and establish inventories of resource sites of federally and state-listed species. It goes on to state the board must therefore designate resource sites for coho salmon. In addition, the board must determine whether forest practices would conflict with these resource sites, and if so, must adopt rules to protect sites from the conflicts. The petition includes sections on the legal grounds for the petition, the biology and ecology of coho salmon, the population status, the potential conflicts of forestry practices with the resource site, the inadequacy of Oregon's regulatory regime, and the rulemaking request. The petition also includes new rules with proposed language. And just an important note here, based upon our review, the petition meets some of the criteria or most of the criteria set forth in Administrative Procedures Act, meaning it's a valid petition. So therefore, you'll need to make a decision today on whether to accept or deny the petition. So, options for the board to consider. One would be to accept the petition and proceed to rulemaking related to resource site protection rules for coho salmon, as described in ORS 527710. You can also deny the petition in writing, or you could deny the petition in writing and direct the department to begin rulemaking to better align water protection and resource site protection rules. Through further conversations, there's also a fourth option that you could choose to implement. You could accept the petition and direct the department to begin rulemaking to better align water protection and resource site protection rules and evaluate ORS 527710 to address the requirements under subsection 3A. And the board could direct the department to conduct rulemaking to define the resource site for coho salmon. The board could direct the department to evaluate other obligations as well under ORS 527710 sub 3 in the context of the board's previous and current work. So those are the options. And are there any questions at this point?
Okay, then we'll move to total of 15 minutes. Are you keeping time? Do you want us to keep? Yes, Thank you. We'll keep this for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I guess I'll just start by saying Mr. Nick Cady, we hoped, was going to be here today, but he's been unable to attend. So so I think we're going to basically start down at that end, then come to me, and then go to Conrad and maybe Mary. So,
any order you'd like is fine.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
Okay. So my name is Jessica Butt, and I'm here alongside my colleague, Noah Michael. We're part of petitioner Cascadia Wildlands legal team here representing Nick Cady today. So today we're just going to plainly and very concisely lay out the black letter law here, specifically the Board of Forestry's statute imposed non-discretionary duties. We've spoken about that briefly today. I'm going to go into a little more depth. So specifically, we're concerned today with the resource site inventory and rulemaking responsibilities of this board. Great. So the duties and powers of the board are all very neatly and concisely found in one place, as I'm sure you know, written under ORS 527.710, and this slide just shows you the location of that statute in the legislature. So this board is legally required, again, as I'm sure you're familiar with these rules, to adopt rules to provide for the overall maintenance of fish and wildlife species. And all of the board's responsibilities, of course, are consistent with its foundational policy considerations, which are found under ORS 527.630, which Noah will briefly discuss in a moment. The board is further required to, and I'll be reading some of the language here, collect and analyze the best possible information and establish inventories of resource sites needing protection, specifically for threatened and endangered species, both state and federally listed. Again, this includes Oregon's three remaining coho salmon ESUs, which are both state and federally listed threatened species, one of which is a state-listed endangered species. So upon a determination that forest practices would conflict with these resource sites, the board is then required to determine the consequences of these conflicting uses and establish the appropriate levels of protection for these concerned resource sites. And then finally, having completed all of the above requirements, the board is, again, legally obligated, these obligations are not optional or discretionary, legally obligated to adopt rules to protect resource sites that they've inventoried. Again, this is just the black letter that we're concerned with today in this meeting. Alternately, if an agency does refuse to act or delays action unreasonably, a court may compel that agency to act pursuant to 183.490. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't come to this. I'm under the influence that it generally does not. And those are just all of the Oregon revised statutes associated with this petition, essentially, and with this board's duties concerning this particular petition that we filed today.
Thank you, Jess. Can everyone hear me? Sorry about that. Thank you, Jess. My name is Noah Michael. I'm just going to touch on the policy requirements of the statute that Jess has just explained. So as we know, these non-discretionary statutory obligations are also adherent to Oregon's public policy, and you can find that in 527.630. The rulemaking duties and responsibilities of the board must be consistent with this same public policy because of the statutory language that you find in 527.710. This emphasizes the necessity of sound forest management practices as a factor of proper resource protections for wildlife and aquatic life. The next section continues to explain the same point and further illustrates the aims of responsible forest management practices. You'll see in section 2, explains that despite other agency actions or other laws or even overlapping legal authority, there is a statutory obligation to maintain the proper implementation of the laws and regulations as it relates to forest operations. That said, it is also in the public interest for this board to protect the future interests of future Oregonians and future generations of Oregonians by developing sound forest management practices in coordination with the other relevant agencies and laws. The next area of statute or rule where you'll find information pertaining to this statute in is the Oregon Administrative Rules. We briefly heard about the Oregon APA previously, but just to touch on that a little bit further, these rules outline the most simple processes and practices that the board is obligated to follow, and each of these locations you'll see with these arrows next to them essentially outline what those processes and practices would look like as it refers to those administrative rules. And I'll pass it off to our colleagues down the other end.
That's Mary. I'm going to be next. I'm sorry. I wasn't clear there. Great. Thank you, Chair Imason, board members. For the record, Bob Van Dyke, Wild Salmon Center. A few comments on the petition today. I'd like to start by saying that we encourage you to accept the petition today. And I'll add a few things to that. So first, I'd like to note that the Oregon Coast coho populations are not increasing. We've seen some communications that indicate they are increasing. I went to the Salmon and Steelhead Recovery Tracker website over the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and this shows their sort of overall look at abundance numbers. And you can see for the last 4 years, 15, 16, 17, and 18, the numbers have been quite low. The black line there shows what the actual goal is for the ESU in terms of abundance. So from our view, we're well below the abundance goal, around 10%, and that the numbers are certainly not increasing. So this is one reason we joined the petition, in that we thought this was a good chance to revisit the coho rules, or the rules that affect coho on forest lands, and ask the question, are they sufficient? How are they affecting coho habitat? I'd like to say, secondly, that as we went through the materials today, you were presented with three options: accept, deny, and then a third option, this option three, which was about a policy review. And I guess I'd just like to say that that was confusing to us. We could have used some more information. In a couple conversations with board members, it seems like there maybe was a lack of clarity there about what that option was exactly. I did get a chance to, I called staff and talked to them about it. And the impression I got in part was that it may be the case that the water resource rules were the right place to address concerns about aquatic species and not the resource site rules. So to the extent that's the case, I guess I offer some confusion, because I went and looked at the resource site rules, and the resource site rules name fish there circled in red. In the purpose of the resource site rules, it talks about water resources, aquatic life, water, and fish. The definitions talk about fish twice. The reporting talks about fish, and the process for evaluating all mention fish. So all of these said to us that this was the place to go in the resource site rules. It wasn't clear to us why we would think otherwise. So on that point, I would say, if you're going to go down a policy route or review policy about where to petition, I would hope you would grant this petition, and then in future petitions, if you should decide to change that process, then change the process. But it would then be clearer to us about how to proceed, which wouldn't have been the case. So I guess I'd like to end by saying, as I look at the resource site rules, I think the department has a lot of discretion in how they would actually move forward if they accept this petition. There's not a hard timeline, and the processes to be followed are pretty broad. So our goal, really, by joining this petition, is to add value to projects that are underway. So as you saw earlier today, I think there are projects on wood, large wood recruitment, and on the Siskiyou rules that are underway. So our desire would be not to impede that work, but instead for a review of coho to be complementary to that work. And so I guess that would be a conversation to have going forward. And I guess I'd like to say, lastly, that we've got interest in working with the board and staff and other stakeholders to think about what that process would look like, what we would look at in evaluating the adequacy of the protections for coho. I guess I'd just like to say, lastly and briefly, it feels slightly in Oregon like there's a change of tone around some of these forest issues, and there's some more tension over them. And we'd like to see this to be a topic where we could actually maybe sit at a shared table outside of the boardroom to talk about what a process would look like and what some shared goals are and differences are that we have. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Forrester Doherty, Chair Imason, members of the board. My name is Conrad Gowell. I'm a fellowship program director at the Native Fish Society and one of the organizations listed on the petition. The Native Fish Society is here to envision a future full of abundant wild fish, free-flowing rivers, and thriving local communities. Like Bob, I'm here to encourage you to accept the petition to move forward with looking at increased protections for coho salmon. on the trajectory they're on, which is flatlining, it continues to put them in the ICU and continues to have restoration practitioners managing them as if they're in the intensive care unit in a hospital. We are doing extraordinary measures. We're taking Chinook helicopters and dropping wood into streams because they're not naturally being put there. I personally have snorkeled hundreds of miles of streams throughout Western Oregon, and I can tell you there are pieces of large wood out of streams that were put there hundreds of years ago that are starting to disappear from these systems. And with them, they take gravel, they take habitat, and they are not being replaced. I personally witnessed the loss of large woody debris jams and seen the attempts and participated in the attempts in trying to put them back into these streams artificially, rather than looking at the natural stream functions that put them there naturally. And I can tell you it's unsustainable. We've spent tens of millions of dollars on our habitat restoration, and it's not showing in the aquatic habitat inventories that we're making progress towards restoring that aquatic habitat. And that is concerning because we cannot intentionally put ourselves in this position indefinitely. We do want to realize a future full of abundant fish throughout Coho's range. So I wanted to speak to just two other points. The first of which, there's an aquatic ecologist whose name is Kurt Fausch, and he has done experiments looking at the aquatic terrestrial interface and the relationships between upland species and aquatic species. And I think traditionally people have pinholed fish into only being aquatic species that we need to separate out from how we manage forests. And that is not the case. Kurt Fausch put a screen in between a stream and the surrounding forest and measured a variety of species. Everything dropped by 50%. It was the bats, it was the spiders, it was the fish, it was the aquatic macroinvertebrates. And this shows that the upland management decisions we're making are having ramifications in the stream. And the decisions we're making in the stream have upland terrestrial management implications. That should be thoroughly evaluated, not pigeonholed into looking at, you know, just stream temperature or just shade. Those things need to be considered as a whole, and that's what this resource site petition is designed to help us be able to do. Secondly, I've worked with Mary Skurlock here on a debris torrent stream analysis. We looked at the Siletz River and found that less than 1% of debris torrent streams were currently protected under existing Forest Practices Act. Knowing that 50% of the large woody debris comes out of debris torrents rather than riparian areas, we know that that replacement is not occurring. So that's just one additional example. We can point to the studies that are ongoing there. I know there are additional problems in state forests on the North Coast that we can also look at. But just wanted to highlight that as another example where these practices are unsustainable, and we're hoping this resource site process can help move the conversation and the protections forward.
Mary Skurlock with the Oregon Stream Protection Coalition. I'm really just going to close for my colleagues here. I encourage you to simplify the issues that are before you today down to really what is before you, which is, while we have previewed some of the biology that we hope will be considered in the process, acceptance of this petition is what's on the table. We have explained why we think it is your legal duty to do that, but also why that doesn't commit you to any specific rule content. And in fact, where the board's discretion lies is subsequent to this decision today. It is to the form and content of the process that follows. And we are hopeful that that can be a collaborative process. We also hope that some of the confusion and, frankly, fear around this petition can be alleviated by better communication, both from the department and from the petitioners, about what the process is. And I'm saddened by that, that there is clearly been some confusion about the consequences of accepting this petition. We think it's the beginning of a process that needs to happen and is due to happen now around Coho. I commend to you also the comments of Rogue Riverkeeper, which have been submitted They were not able to be here today. And also to flag that in addition to large wood, the issue of landscape level impacts from roads is one that I would highlight and have shared some slides. So thanks very much.
Thank you all for hearing. Any questions anybody has? Thanks. We'll then call our next panel, Greg Corbin, Jeff Light, and Seth Barnes. And do you want us to just keep time for the whole panel, or do you want?
Yes, time for the whole panel would be excellent. Thank you. Chair Imason, State Forester Doherty, and members of the board, for the record, my name is Seth Barnes, and I've appeared for you before, but for the record, I'm the Director of Forest Policy with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. Today we're here to discuss the COHO petition that you have before you. For context, I spent some time earlier this week going through the Oregon Forest Practices Act to review all the many rules place in the for the protection of water quality and salmon. These range from protections during road construction, requirements during road maintenance and requirements for road maintenance, harvest systems, skid trails, ongoing incentivizing wood placement in stream improvement projects, soil erosion, harvest buffers, riparian areas, to name a few, right? My tally came to, and these included the newly passed SSBT rules. My tally came to 130 rules, over 130 rules, and I tried to be conservative in that. It could be upwards of 150 rules that are required to be followed while you're conducting forest practices directly for the protection of fish and salmon. The work of this board and the Department of Forestry does not stop, and currently you are involved in several ongoing projects. These include the Siskiyou Riparian Review, as well as the Western Oregon Large Woody Debris and Desired Future Condition Reviews that are underway. Yeah, I know you're aware of that, but this is all your work, and it's all in the context of a larger policy body, a body of policy work on state forests, and as well as Marble Murelet and all sorts of other things that you're involved in. All to say, your work does not stop. Recognizing this morning that I've given you a letter that includes both the legal and policy analysis and the scientific response to the petition that you were given. We submitted that yesterday. I gave you another copy of it today. We recognize that that was a robust piece of work, and so in trying to be as responsive as we could, we provided that to you beforehand so you could at least get a glance at it before we came and presented on it today. I realize that it's not fun to be surprised with information, which is why we gave you that information yesterday. My apologies for later than I would have hoped, but at least it was to you before you got here this morning. I'd like to introduce you to the two gentlemen that I brought with me to my right. Greg Corbin and Jeff Light both bring an enormous amount of experience in their respective fields. Greg is an attorney with Stoll Reeves in Portland and has worked on many natural resource issues with a variety of clients. Jeff Light has a master's degree in fisheries from the University of Washington and 30 years of studying forestry-fishery interactions throughout the Pacific Northwest. We felt that it would be beneficial for you to hear straight from them rather than getting information filtered through me. You'll hear that the petition is overreaching in its recommendations and inappropriate as a policy process. You'll hear that the petitioners didn't include important research regarding the effectiveness of current forest practice rules, research that didn't support their conclusions. And you will hear the coho populations across Oregon are not only stable, but are increasing since the inception of the Oregon Plan for Salmon. We urge the board to reject the petition. With that, I turn the time over to my colleagues.
Good afternoon. Chair Imason, State Forester Doherty, members of the board. My name is Greg Corbin. I'm a partner with Stoll Reeves, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. My firm has a long history of engagement with forest issues in Oregon, and I'm pleased to have this opportunity to provide these comments on behalf of OFIC and its members. I'd like to use my time to highlight a few of the points made in my written testimony, which has been provided to you. I'll focus on the most important. The petition for rulemaking was submitted to you under Oregon's Administrative Procedures Act and is governed by the Forest Practices Act. As you have already been advised previously, under the APA, the board has 90 days in which to either deny the petition in writing or initiate rulemaking. We have come to that decision point, and I want to make clear that under the APA, the board has broad discretion in this matter, and that broad discretion includes the ability to deny the petition. Beyond the 90-day decision deadline, neither the APA nor its regulations provides any specific evaluative criteria that agencies must follow when considering petitions for new rules. The absence of any specific direction in the APA makes clear that in reviewing the petition, the board may consider any relevant factors to accept or deny the petition. This view of broad agency discretion is borne out in case law and interpretation of the APA by the Oregon Attorney General. For example, the Court of Appeals defers to agencies in their disposition of petitions for rulemaking and has explained that among the many factors an agency may consider are the sufficiency of the evidence supporting the need for a rule and whether the agency already has in place or is engaged in administrative actions that mitigate the need for the rulemaking. You've already heard that this board and the department has a long history and a continuing plan to address the conditions that support GOHO. And as you will hear next, the petition misinterprets and omits findings concerning the effectiveness of current efforts to protect salmon, as well as the abundance and population trajectory of GOHO. In short, in the face of the work already done and this board's continuing engagement in this issue, it is unnecessary and wasteful of limited agency resources to initiate a rulemaking on GOHO resource sites at this time. And under the APA, a decision by this board to deny the petition is completely within the bounds of the law. The board also must consider the petition in light of the procedures and standards set out in the Forest Practices Act and this board's own rules. ORS 527.710, you've already heard about, lays out a specific procedure for the board to follow when considering resource site protection rules. First, the board must collect and analyze the best available information and establish inventories of resource sites needing protections. That has to happen first. Second, once inventories are established, the board must determine whether forest practices would conflict with those inventory resource sites. That hasn't happened yet. Only if the board identifies a conflict between forest practices and inventoried resource sites may the board proceed to consider the consequences of that conflict and determine appropriate levels of protection. Importantly, reaching the conclusion that a conflict exists does not automatically lead to rulemaking. For example, the board also must consider the comprehensive rulemaking factors set out in ORS 527.714, which, among other things, requires the board to consider non-regulatory alternatives and to determine that the alternative selected is the least burdensome to landowners and timber owners that still provides the desired protection. The petition seeks to have the board initiate a rulemaking without following the procedures of ORS 527.710. And this board's rules, and without first having considered the rulemaking factors under ORS 527.714. The petitioners would have this board jump to rulemaking before having determined what the best available information on the subject is, before establishing an inventory of resource sites, before making the predicate finding that a conflict between forest practices and resource sites exists, and without consideration of the ORS 527.714 factors. Doing so would be a clear violation of these statutes and the board's own rules, thus subjecting the board's decision to legal challenge. Apart from procedural deficiencies, the petition seeks a rule that far exceeds the bounds of what the FPA contemplates. For example, the petition seeks to have the board designate as resource sites, quote, all watersheds containing coho salmon rearing and spawning habitat in Oregon. Such a broad brush, all habitat approach is inconsistent with the concept of resource sites. The legislative history of ORS 527.710 makes clear that resource sites are to be limited to the specific locations on which a species depends, such as a bird's nesting or roosting sites, and does not include that site plus some additional area of habitat. An Oregon Attorney General opinion confirms that a resource site is not the species habitat generally, and rather is limited to specific locations. In the context of coho, designating an entire watershed as a resource site would be tantamount to designating the species habitat generally and subject the rule to additional legal challenge. As you've already heard, this board's past and continuing work on salmon protection makes the petition's rulemaking request unnecessary. And you're about to hear that the petition is deficient in its interpretation of the science and that the status of the species does not warrant a resource site rulemaking. Before turning to the science, I would like to urge you to resist engaging in a rulemaking driven by a species-specific, interest-based petition. My written testimony discusses this in greater detail, and I expect you will hear more about this from other commenters, but in short, OFIC believes there are strong policy and prudential reasons for the board to continue on its existing path
of considered resource protection and not allow its priorities and resources to be captured and driven by species-specific interest-based petitions that fail to take a more holistic view of balancing forest practices with the need for resource protections, particularly in light of the significant work already undertaken and the continuing efforts of this board, the department, and the landowners who have invested greatly in improving the conditions for salmon in our forests. Thank you for the time to address the board on this important topic. I'd be happy to take any questions.
So, Mr. Chair, Forester Doherty, and members of the board, for the record, my name is Jeff Light, and I'm here on behalf of forest landowners to talk to you about some of the science about contemporary forest management and its effects on coho and their habitat. We felt that the science presented in the petition gave an inaccurate picture of how forestry, contemporary forest management does affect coho and their habitat. And we wanted to start with a look at the issue of coho, wild coho abundance. These are the same or close to the same data that you just saw by Mr. Van Dyke, and they show you that by decade since the 1950s, there was a decline in returning wild adult coho spawners through the 1990s, and then in the 1990s when the species was petitioned for listing, ODFW invested in hatchery reforms and harvest reductions, and as you heard, the Forest Practices Act was greatly revised. And in the first two decades, or almost two decades of this century, we've seen large rebounds in the numbers of wild spawners. Now, the 2010s bar, which is only 11 through 17, would be larger, we think, if it hadn't been for some very crappy ocean conditions in the last few years that suppressed the numbers of returning spawners. But we do know that 2011 and 2014 in that bar were record high numbers of adult spawners returning, wild spawners returning, that hadn't been seen in the 50 years of monitoring. So they may not be the goals that the department has set yet, but the trend is and the potential is that they are going up and the freshwater habitat can support that increase. So a hallmark of the Forest Practices Act has always been its basis in science, from the initial act and revision subsequent to that. And I wanted to present to you some information on the very directly related to the question at hand about how do forest practices, current forest practices, affect fish. A lot of the petition science included stuff we felt was from historic practices that aren't practiced anymore, and they missed some of this very important work on directly linking forest practices to how the fish respond. The chief of those is the paired watershed studies that I'm sure you're aware of. In 2002, Hinkle Creek started, and then Alsea and Trask followed. These studies were designed with the aim to identify exactly what forest practices were doing to fish habitat physically and also to the fish themselves. And let's take a look at what the fish told us. Did they get the memo? Well, we feel like there's two lines of evidence here. The first of those comes from the Hinkle Phase 1 harvest and also from the Trask, where the emphasis was to look at harvest on non-fish-bearing tributaries. Those are the ones that, for private forest lands, don't require standing tree buffers on them. So it's more intensive in the headwaters, and there's a lot more headwater streams. So naturally, it's a question of how do those affect the downstream fish resources. So Hinkle and Trask looked at that and found, as you can see here, that there were significant increases in biomass of age one cutthroat in the reach downstream of the harvest, and there were no other detectable effects on downstream fish or their habitat. Similarly, in the Trask, no effect of harvest on the growth of trout or sculpins when measured downstream of the headwater clearcut. The other line of evidence comes from when you harvest clearcut adjacent to fish-bearing streams, and you imply the buffers that were in the rules at the time. That's what that photo shows. Alsea Phase 1 was where that was tested. And in that case, the percentage pool habitat increased in the reach that was harvested and in the unharvested reach downstream. Density and biomass of age 1 cutthroat also increased both in that reach and downstream. And this study was unique of the three in that coho populations live in these watersheds. And in that case, we found no significant changes in any of the biotic parameters measured of coho populations with timber harvest upstream and adjacent to the stream they inhabit. This isn't the only source of information on this. There's a paired watershed in British Columbia that did the same thing where they have, of course, different practices, but they found no detectable effects on abundance and condition of trout. So I'm out of time. I'll say there's more information in the written documents in front of you, but we would urge you that based on the science, we see no reason to accept the petition. Thank you.
We now have 15 people had signed up for public testimony. Several of you have already appeared, and I think at least covered a large part of this. Just to be clear on that list, Bob Van Dyke, Mary Skurlock, Lauren Hutnick, and Brianna Sagdahl. So what I'm going to do is reduce this list to, I think it's 11, and then allocate 2.5 minutes per person. And we really ask you to stick with that to help get us through this. We want to hear from you, but we also want to respect the fact that we need to make a decision here today. I'll call six at a time because we have six chairs. Craig Pope, Rex Storm, Megan Tuttle, Jim James, and Mike Barsotti are the first six.
Chair Madison, for the record, I'm Susan Morgan from the AOC, and I just have to report that Commissioner Pope's calendar didn't allow him to speak this late.
Okay.
But he submitted
testimony.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So then we'll add Stanley Petrowski.
I'll go ahead and start. Chair Imeson and board members, State Forester Doherty, my name is Rex Storm. I'm a certified forester, certified family forest land owner, and forest policy manager for Associated Oregon Loggers. We urge the board to deny the petition with no rulemaking concerning the received Coho petition. Previously enacted riparian upgrades that benefit Coho are now accruing great watershed gains year after year, and these benefits will continue taking time to be fully realized. The desired accrual of riparian habitat benefits has already been codified in rule changes over the last 10 to 20 years. Next point, high compliance rates demonstrate successful implementation of harvest and riparian forest practice rules. And private landowners and operators take significant pride in doing the right thing to make for good stewardship of Oregon's forests in riparian areas. We walk the talk. The next point, cooperative stewardship among landowners, among operators, and among Oregon Department of Forestry stewardship foresters. Working together, these three parties are achieving watershed enhancement additionality that would be unachievable via regulation alone. I share this cooperative stewardship relationship with you so that you may fully appreciate the fundamental role forest cooperators have in achieving the desired results of Oregon's forests, especially concerning the additionality of added protections and added habitat benefits for Coho that occur beyond regulation. So in closing, I'd like to say that there is no urgent need to elevate regulation. There's insufficient impetus to determine that the current rules impact Coho today or tomorrow. The department's next step, we believe, should be continued investment in two things. First, monitoring forest riparian conditions, which appear to be improving. And secondly, cooperative stewardship, investing more in cooperative stewardship efforts with forest landowners and operators that have proven successfully to foster their willing additionality in watershed enhancements, such as voluntary enhancements in high compliance with the current forest rules. Thank you for this opportunity to come.
Chair Imeson, members of the board, my name is Mike Barsotti. I live on a certified family forest land with my wife in northern Linn County. I'm president of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. OSWA endorses OFIC's written testimony. The Forest Practices Act and landowner voluntary efforts to restore salmon habitat for over 20 years are apparently working as native coho salmon populations are increasing. Benefits from existing voluntary and forest practice rules efforts take time. Trees don't grow in a year or two, so additional time is needed to see how the existing rules are working. The Forest Practices Act policy statement, as noted earlier in 527-630, can be summarized in today's language as forest sustainability. And as a side note, that's quite impressive for Oregon, as in the early 70s, the national and state concern was timber supply. And at that time, our Forest Practices Act statute stated that, and it's kind of interesting, there were different parts of that same rule were taken out in earlier, but so I'll go ahead and read the 527-630, number one. Forests make a vital contribution to Oregon by providing jobs, products, tax base, and other social and economic benefits while helping to maintain forestry species, soil, air, water resources, and providing habitat for wildlife and aquatic life. Therefore, it is declared to be public policy in the state of Oregon to encourage economic, efficient forest practices that encourage the continued growing and harvesting of forest tree species and maintaining forest land for such purposes as leading to as a leading use on private forest land, consistent with sound management of soil, air, water, fish, and wildlife resources and scenic resources and visually sensitive corridors, and to encourage the continual benefit of these resources for future generations in Oregon, basically forest sustainability. Family forest landowners are appreciative of the board's approach over the nearly 50 years of managing the forest practice rules through being guided by sound science and detailed studies. And withstanding political pressure and special interest groups that focus on one leg of this forest sustainability. Again, OSWA requests that you reject this request.
Chairman Imanson, State Forester Doherty, members of the Board of Forestry. My name is Jim James. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. And I'm asking the board to reject the petition. And these are the reasons why. Oregon's forest practice laws are already excellent protections for all fish species, including coho salmon. My career in forestry started in 1970, just before the forest practice laws were passed. I'm proud of the way the forest practice laws have evolved over time, following good forestry science and assuming the protection of all the ecological values are protected. FPU rules are designed to effectively and efficiently meet the needs of salmon, and compliance with those rules are very high. Furthermore, the forest landowner community has always responded and stepped up when needed. In 1997, an effort to improve coho salmon habitat, the Oregon Plan, was developed. In collaboration with Governor Kitzhaber, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Department of Forestry, and OWEB, a voluntary plan was implemented to improve forest roads, replace non-fish bearing culverts, place large wood in streams that were systematically removed after the 1964 flood for human safety. Since 1997, over $1.1 billion has been spent on voluntary measures to protect and improve fish habitat. Those voluntary measures continue today. ODF&W has reported that fish habitat in Oregon's forests are not a limiting factor for coho salmon. In Oregon, FPA rules are part of a larger picture for salmon, representing the concerned effort by these voluntary efforts, agricultural sector work through the Oregon Department of Agriculture, fisheries management through ODF&W, and let us not forget the land use planning use that maintains Oregon's forests as forest. Bottom line, the petitioner's request is simply not needed, and I recommend that the board deny it.
Chair Imason and members of the board, my name is Megan Tuttle, and I am the Western Environmental Affairs Manager for Weyerhaeuser Company. At Weyerhaeuser, sustainability is a core value, and all of our timberlands are certified under the forest management standards of the Sustainable Forestry Initiative. I started a career in forestry because I believe in voluntary efforts to improve water quality, support ecosystems, and implement BMPs based on best scientific research. My first forestry job was actually dedicated to improving fish habitat by replacing culverts, reducing or eliminating fine sediment from entering streams, and abandoning or stabilizing existing roads. I learned through this early work that successful habitat restoration projects depend on collaboration with state and tribal biologists, foresters, and regulators. That type of collaboration is exactly how the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds has been successful. In fact, it has been so successful that it makes little sense for the Board of Forestry to accept the petition for rulemaking or to identify coho resource sites today. As an example of the work that occurs under this voluntary collaborative program, Weyerhaeuser has replaced over 420 blockages to improve fish passage. We are proud of our engineers and foresters that participate in watershed councils and implement habitat projects that stretch from the north coast of Oregon all the way to Coos Bay. In Coos Bay alone, just to focus for a second on one of our tree farms, we have improved 26.4 miles of fish habitat over 35 project sites since 2013 alone. 8 of these projects are collaborative cost-share efforts funded partially through the Oregon Water Enhancement Board with multiple partners like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Land Management, and local watershed councils. In your packet, I've included statistics on the private landowner accomplishments from 1997 through 2017 from ORI. And just in the last biennium, OWEB has invested nearly $85 million for watershed enhancement projects with funding from the Oregon Lottery, Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund, and salmon license plate revenues. OWEB documents and monitors past enhancement projects and recognizes the importance of voluntary collaboration with other state agencies, landowners, and local communities. The manner in which this petition characterized these efforts across Oregon was extremely disappointing to those of us that are at the front lines implementing these projects. Any action taken today by the Board of Forestry, except rejecting the petition, will not support Oregon's collaborative and cross-agency approach to salmon recovery or acknowledge the impact of landowner voluntary efforts on salmon recovery. In closing, the Board of Forestry should reject this petition for rulemaking.
Chair Imason, Board, thank you for this opportunity to come before you and share my views. I am a disabled Vietnam War veteran, volunteered for the war. My wife and I are landowners and small woodland operators. I've spent the last 15 years paying back what the natural world has contributed to me in personal health and well-being. I've participated in over a dozen forestry and aquatic habitat collaboratives. I am a recipient of the National Private Citizen Commitment to Watershed Restoration Award. I've chaired the Watershed Council in Douglas County, and I am currently president of the South Umpqua Rural Community Partnership. I have personally facilitated the expenditure of millions of dollars in habitat restoration in the state of Oregon, and continue in the form of restoration work and monitoring of the results of the work. Coho salmon are still listed, and they are listed because we have not kept up with present science and analysis of the impact of Oregon Forest Practices Act. I live in the middle of Umpqua National Forest. I see the streams. They're full of turbidity and we are not winning the war to recover coho in our streams. I encourage the board to support the petition and recover this important fish species, this keystone species. Thank you.
Next, we'll have Lynette Hoffler, Garrett Klein, Lauren Hutnick, Heath Curtis, Kevin Godbout.
Godboot.
I think Lynette Hoffler is on this list, but I see written, so I'll assume that's written, and then we'll add Bob Reese to this group, and you'll have, again, we'll keep the clock to 2.5 minutes per person.
Good afternoon, Chair Emerson, State Forester Daugherty, and members of the board. For the record, my name is Garrett Kleiner, and I'm a member of the Southwest Regional Forest Practice Committee. On behalf of the Southwest Regional Forest Practices Committee, I would advise you to deny the petition before you. Our committee is one of three statutorily appointed advisory committees to this board focused around forest practices issues. We stay abreast of forest practices related work before this board, discuss policies, practices, and procedures, and then provide counsel for the board to consider. We also consider issues that are occurring in the field and bring relevant work to the board for discussion. In addition, we plan and carry out Operator of the Year awards, helping incentivize good stewardship, safe practices, and innovative solutions to resource protections in the field. With all of this in mind, we have a full slate of issues we are currently working on and keeping track of. As the Southwest Regional Committee, we are currently very much following and discussing the Siskiyou Riparian Review. ODF staff has kept us informed of the process as they conducted their systematic review, and we discussed the issue at length in recent meetings. We plan to stay very much engaged in that issue as the process continues so we can give sound advice and counsel to inform your decisions along the way. We are also closely tracking the large woody debris study that ODF is involved in. That effort, as it has been explained to us, will involve an analysis of rip stream data, along with a modeling effort to better understand potential outcomes in terms of LWD for the benefit of fish, including salmon. We have also weighed in on and are very much tracking the marble murrelet rulemaking process that is underway. As a statutorily appointed advisory committee of this board, we go where you go. This board, in large measure, controls our agenda and what issues we are involved in. We have transitioned to focused on LWD, desired future conditions, Siskiyou riparian work, and marble murrelet. We would urge this board to maintain control of the work in front of you, and as a result, the work in front of us. Do not become a board that is controlled through petitions. We advise the board to be thoughtful in considering the work you undertake. Use the October retreat to discuss future analysis and potential needs for additional rulemakings. As an example, during the SSBT rulemaking discussions, ODF&W presented monitoring data to the RFPCs that was very helpful in understanding the outcomes of forest management to freshwater fish habitat. I would advise this board to reach out to ODF&W.
Just want to call attention that your time expired a little bit ago, so if you could wrap it up, that would be great.
In conclusion, I would advise the board to deny this petition.
Lauren Hutnick, Timber Unity, 501c4. Thank you, Mr. Daugherty. Thank you for the time, Chairman Himes. Under this petition, I request that you guys deny it. I have some serious problems with this petition. In the midst of reading this petition, in nowhere gives any type of report on the coho salmon and what is taking them out of the water. It has no grounds where the coho salmon are losing ground because of there being a food source to eagles, seals, and we know we have a seal problem in the rivers here right now. I have a problem with that. There are some very strict rules in Oregon about runoff, and I'm having a problem with that because there is environmental issues there, and you guys have put those barriers in place, along with this, the petition of this rule making, and with the wildlife corridor, I think you guys are going to create, there's a creation of things are going to get real hard for the logging industry. There is no grounds on the coho salmon on where they're being taken from other countries. And you cannot dump the population and put it on squarely on our backs. The other thing is, I have a problem with addressing the Administration Procedures Act and to be constitutional right and due process for the private landowners. Also, is OBF willing to pay the private owners the loss of timber if this goes into play? And this will be a burden upon the middle class. And at that point in time, I also want to include, very shortly here, I work on four logging sites, two of them currently up on the Clackamas River with Weyerhaeuser throughout the year and Port Blakely. And I've never seen an issue on any one of these jobs. Thank you for your time.
Chair Emerson, State Forest Authority Board members, for the record, my name is Heath Curtis. I'm here on behalf of Hampton Lumber. I appear today to encourage you to deny the petition for new rules to protect the Oregon coho. As an initial matter, Hampton fully supports and echoes the testimony of Mr. Corbin and Mr. Light. You have abundant legal authority to deny the petition, and you should do so both for good governance reasons and because the coho is already adequately protected. I'd like to speak just a little more to the governance issue. As most of you know, this is not my first time to appear before you opposing a resource site rulemaking petition. In July of 2016, you voted to deny a petition to initiate a rulemaking on Marble Murrelet resource sites, but after you were sued, in November of 2016, you convened a very abbreviated meeting to reconsider your decision. That meeting, more than one person pressed that accepting the petition would only serve to prompt more petitions. Given what I'm told were certain legal concerns, you accepted the petition anyway, and here we are again. With respect, it seems to me that allowing special interests to drive your priorities through petition under the Oregon APA is a poor way to conduct the state's business, and I don't think I'm alone on that. In fact, at the November meeting, then-board member Tom Insko offered his, quote, hope that the department would work with staff to begin to identify a way to ensure that we're not, or hopefully at least reduce the chance that we're in the situation we are today where we're having to prioritize based on legal action. The board agreed and asked staff to bring back recommendations, and at the following October planning retreat, the board instructed staff to begin its work on a resource site policy review. While the product of that work has not, to my knowledge, surfaced, I expect that the department is juggling that issue with many other pressing and high-profile issues before the agency. And that's okay. Right now, the agency is grappling with the Siskiyou stream rules, with state forest planning, with large woody debris, with marbled murrelet resource site protection rules, and many other pressing and important matters. Enabling special interests to cut to the front of the line with a generic petition under the Oregon APA cannot be what the legislature had in mind when it drafted ORS 183.390. And to a point made earlier, all of the work that could be done under accepting this petition can and is already being done outside of the petition. That is to say, this is proper work before the board that you are presently doing. If there were some urgent need, that may be one thing, but as Mr. Light detailed for you, the coho is an example of a species in recovery. The protections we put in place in the 90s are, as expected, finally paying dividends. Rather than accept the petition, please consider prioritizing resource site protection in your usual board planning process. Thanks for taking my testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Amundson, members of the board, and State Forest Authority. My name is Kevin Godbout, and I'm with the Weyerhaeuser Company. I'll try to be very brief. You've heard a lot of good comments. I probably don't have a lot to add here, but you have an important decision to make today. Should the board accept the rulemaking petition focused on a single aquatic species or deny the petition and continue this board and the state of Oregon's watershed restoration efforts to recover salmon throughout the state of Oregon? So I think, you know, 3 points I'll make is, one, deny the petition. If we need an out-of-the-room conversation, as indicated by the others, that can occur, but it doesn't have to occur through this forum. Second, don't go it alone. This is a statewide issue related to the management of habitat, the hydro system, the hatchery system, harvest. We have a long tradition in Oregon of doing voluntary measures and working collaboratively. And for the board to take the petition and start another rulemaking process, given all your other priorities and the very good track record that the industry has in collaboration and moving these projects forward, we think it would be, quite frankly, a mistake. And so in summary, I just ask that you deny the petition. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Emerson, Forester Dodery, and members of the Board of Forestry. My name is Bob Reese with the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association. I just want to point out that private forest lands are likely some of the greatest potential production potential, certainly on the North Coast, but also likely some of the greatest threats in the form of thermal temperature degradation that impact wild fish in freshwater ecosystems. Just as rural counties rely on timber as an economy, so too do they rely on the recreational fishing industry that prosecutes itself during this time of the year on the Oregon coast. Hundreds of millions of dollars annually are at stake for opportunity that does or does not exist for coho salmon, both hatchery, wild, as well as Chinook on the Oregon coast. It's important to recognize the contributions that have been outlaid here by the private forest sector. Indeed, they've invested millions of dollars and massive amounts of time in recovery of wild salmon, and we encourage continuance of that and partnerships in that initiative. I want to point out that coho were initially listed over 20 years ago, and we have yet to reach successful, consistent benchmarks for the delisting of that species. In this year's, the graph that you saw earlier that indicated coho are indeed on a trajectory of upward rebounding is to some degree true, but far from some of the numbers that were indicated. Over 400,000 coho, wild coho, came back to the North Coast around 2014. This year's prediction is about 76,100. Last year's actual return of Oregon Coast native coho salmon was 81,300. Not that far above the benchmark that actually triggered the listing in the first place. I'd like to also emphasize the opportunity to bring together stakeholders in a collaborative process to really put this conflict to bed. You still realize a great deal of anxiety that happens between the stakeholders in this room. And we hope that this accepting this petition will help bring those groups together so we can better understand each other's science and work more closely together for the recovery of these fish. So in finality, I'd like to suggest that the Northwest Guides and Anglers Association supports the Board of Forestry moving forward in support of this petition, and I thank you.
And yes, Cindy is there, should be connected now and able to also ask questions.
Yep, I've got a question if there's no one there that's got the floor.
It's less than perfect acoustics.
She said you had a question.
Did you say you had a question, Cindy?
Yeah, I do have a question.
Okay, it's much better.
Okay, I've got a couple. Are you there?
Yes. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. So one question relates to the option three. Deny the petition and direct the department to better align the resource and water protection rules. And I haven't seen anything in the staff report or heard any discussion that indicates there is an alignment problem. So I'm wondering what the basis for that recommendation is.
So what I think I heard, Cindy, was a question about what if there is an issue right now with the water protection rules on the specified resource site division. Is that so? Currently, there is no linkage between the specified resource site rules and the board's policy under the water protection division listed in the Forest Practices Act. So the discussion and what option number three would be in clarity, as we described in the options, would be to make a rulemaking process that defined and connected those two pieces together.
So my question is, I have seen no evidence to indicate that there is a problem with alignment between those two sets of rules. So I'm wondering what the basis for that recommendation is.
So in my mind, part of the discussion there is that the process under 527.710 requires the board, and there's obligations there for inventory, conflict, and protection measures, as you guys heard. The way that's been addressed for other species is defining that in the specified resource site rules. So to the extent that you believe that there is connection with the petition, that's where we would have rulemaking to address those two things.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm under the impression that the water protection rules are sort of as a goal the general protection of water quality benefits and beneficial uses of waters of the state, and that the resource site protection rules are really designed to deal with threatened, endangered, and sensitive, and, you know, otherwise particularly vulnerable resources that would require something beyond what we see in the water resource rules. Is that not the division of labor between those two sets of rules?
I don't believe so.
So, Cindy, the most recent water rules were passed for salmon, steelhead, and bull trout streams. So they were focused on specific species. So, again, yeah, the...
Go ahead. Yeah, so my impression, the recent rules and the riparian rules that are in the water protection were really designed to meet the Clean Water Act requirements for protecting clean water, and we simply, for political reasons, not biological ones, decided to apply those rules only to salmon, steelhead, and bull trout. But the rules themselves were not written to protect salmon, steelhead, and bull trout. They were written to comply with water quality, Clean Water Act rules.
So the protecting cold water is directly applied to salmon. That's an EQC rule that it applies to salmon, steelhead, and bull trout only. So the protecting cold water rule is specifically developed for salmon, steelhead, and bull trout reaches. That wasn't a board decision.
Brendan.
It was a board decision to apply it only to salmon, steelhead, and bull trout, but that's a whole other discussion.
So, Cindy, we've got some, can we rotate?
I'm sort of wondering, you know, sort of, I haven't seen in the staff report or in the staff presentations any indication that there is a problem with alignment between the water protection and the resource site protection rules. So it seems to me that if there is a possible alignment problem, that's a whole other issue and discussion that perhaps should come up for consideration in the October retreat for work plan discussions.
Okay, we've...
That's sort of a secondary thing unrelated to the question before us today.
Okay, and we've got some other, at least another question here. So we'll go to Brenda.
Just very quickly, so water temperature is what was defined to meet the needs of salmonids, and that's necessary but not sufficient to define the habitat requirements for each species of salmonid that occur in these streams. So the resource definition, resource site definition for each species is different from maintaining cold water as one prerequisite for those species. Those two are separate issues. We should not conflate them.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess I don't believe the petition is necessary. Can you? Kind of a feedback loop.
Cindy, could you mute your phone when you're not testifying? That might be the issue.
I'll try again. I'll try again. I don't believe the petition is necessary. We have an adaptive management process. We have very strong protection measures in the state. I think we talk a lot. I mean, I began my career in the Coast Range in the 90s, doing a lot of this work, seeing this work happen, working in riparian areas, seeing the restoration work, and I've seen it in the current part of the state that I work in today. I see the robust nature of our act. I also see the work that we're doing along with the siskiyous, large woody debris, work that we're accomplishing and we're doing. And so I don't see or believe that it's necessary to accept this petition.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Joe. I mean, if we have a issue with coho or some kind of, you know, whatever the problem may be, let's fix it. But I don't believe through the petition is the right way to do it. I'm not arguing the fact that if there is a problem or not, you know, let's fix it if there is. But I can't support accepting the petition way of doing it.
Yeah, I heard from several of the folks who testified that there was some interest, at least, in some collaboration to move this issue forward. And I do believe that there is pretty compelling evidence that the population of coho is not increasing. If you aggregate data over a decade, then tells a different story than if you look at year-to-year patterns. And so my view is that we do go ahead and accept the petition, but we do so with the request that we get a multi-stakeholder group together to see if they can collaborate and have that include landowners, the conservation community, agencies, and others, and come back to us with what they view as their next proposed step for rulemaking around this issue.
Yeah, Tom, I appreciate what Bob and Mary said about collaboration. I think that's what we need to do. We need to have those conversations. I think we can have those conversations regardless of this petition. I think whether we accept this petition or not, a part of that conversation related to rulemaking. Rulemaking is important, and that's why we're embarked on what we're embarked on or what we're working with within the siskiyous currently. So, but I really appreciate what was said earlier by some of the people testifying, a willingness to work together and collaborate to help solve this issue, because the coho salmon is very, very important. It's very important.
I a few different things I want to say. I mean, one thing, I'll just put it out there. I am frustrated by this conversation that echoes our national conversation and is so tribal on both sides, and no one will give an inch, and we can't even agree about what the situation is with coho populations. And the petitioners, you know, show us a graph that is carefully constructed to not really show the real picture, but to show what they want us to believe, accurate, and industry also shows us a graph that ends up not really telling us the whole picture. So I guess I'm not making any friends today, because I'm gonna be scolding everybody here on the tribal behaviors. That said, I think, I agree with Brenda. I think that we should accept the petition in a version of four that also brings in some of the stakeholders, so that we can actually hopefully figure out exactly what the petitioners want and get there as quickly as possible. Also want to say to the petitioners that I really feel, you know, this is a bad way to do business. And if we continue to have these petitions going forward, I hope that you realize that you're not going to get what you want, because you're going to swamp this department and create a situation where they can't really function going forward. So I guess that's it for now.
Yeah, I can jump in there. I mean, my starting feeling echoed back to the Marble Murrelet ruling. I think that I think that the process that the board has in place for strategic planning and developing work plans with the board and with the statutory committees, but more broadly with the stakeholders, is a good process. And we've put in place a number of things responding to a number of complex challenges and priorities related to the mission and purpose of this board, and specifically to the protection and conservation of coho, and recognizing, as the petitioners noted in their opening remarks, that 527.630 is not just about fish and wildlife. It's also about jobs and economy and people in rural communities, and that we need to come up with sound natural resource policy that balances all of that. And we're not going to do that if we keep using single species as the hammer to drive individual interests, right? We've all got to figure out how we come together and find that balance. And to the extent that that challenge is left only on seven voluntary board members who rotate in and out through very complex issues that evolve over years, that's a very poor process. And it really needs the stakeholders to be willing to sit down and help find solutions that achieve that balance. So I'm equally frustrated in this process. I would also say, we've all got to be a little bit more humble and more appreciative of the complexity of this, and not cherry pick the data, right? I mean, the Oregon Coast Coho Conservation Plan states very clearly that the recent flatlining is most likely related to ocean conditions. That relates to me because I know the Nez Perce Tribe Fisheries Department and ODF&W have said the same thing about Chinook and Steelhead in eastern Oregon, that the primary constraints over the last couple of years have been coastal, not local. And that these cycles play out over periods of time that are probably more appropriately measured in decades and not in individual years. And so trying to understand that and really understand what the primary limiting factors are and where do we get the most bang for the buck, I think is critical. That being said, we've heard, we've received advice that there may be a need to think about how we're dealing with coho related to the resource site issues, and so then the question in my mind is, do we deny it, anticipate an appeal and a circuit court review, and gamble with the outcome of that circuit court review on the basis of the evidence that the department will then be required to develop under a very under a court defined timeline, or do we accept the petition and define that process and work with the stakeholders in a more measured and appropriate way? And so that's what I am wrestling with. I think there's some wisdom in thinking about what Director Abraham has suggested in terms of thinking about conducting a rulemaking that states streams are the resource site for coho salmon, and then evaluating the other obligations under 710 in relation to our previous and current work on stream classification, stream protection, and fish conservation.
Okay. Thank you, Schnells. And I guess I find myself resonates with me. Cindy, do you have a further comment?
Yes, I do, if now is the right time. Are you ready for me to talk?
Yeah, I hope we're ready to get a motion in front of the board.
One brief comment, and then I'll make a motion. Brief comment is that the ORS clearly assigns to the board the duty and responsibility of designating resource sites for threatened and endangered fish. And we have before us a petition that, at least it appears to me, was submitted in a manner that complied with all of the requirements of the Administrative Procedures Act. And while the board has broad discretion on whether or not to accept the petition, sort of how we handle it, we're clearly not allowed to make a decision that is arbitrary and capricious. And I don't see any substantive grounds that we could validly use for denying the petition. Therefore, I move that we accept the petition and proceed with a collaborative approach, as discussed earlier, to rulemaking.
That's what I would like. I would actually like some staff commentary here, Peter and Kyle.
There's a little.
You put out an option four.
Would it be helpful to read option four, which is a combination of option one and three?
Yes.
I mean, I think Nels did it already a little bit, but yeah.
Cindy, I haven't seen any option four, so I really don't know what it is you're referring to.
Yeah, I will read it, I think, if that's helpful. So option four, again, is sort of a combination. Accept the petition, direct the department to begin rulemaking to align the water protection and resource site rules and evaluate ORS 527.710. Language could be that the board accepts the petition, proceeds to rulemaking related to resource site protection rules for Coho salmon described in ORS 527.710. And to address the requirements under ORS 527.710.3A, the board directs the department to conduct rulemaking to define the resource site for Coho salmon. The board also directs the department to evaluate all other obligations under ORS 527.710 sub 3 in the context of the board's previous and current work and current stream classification and stream protection strategies.
So what is...
We don't know. Yeah, I mean, we're in a little odd parliamentary thing, so let's all just be sort of forgiving about that. Because I don't know if that's what Cindy proposed or if she would propose it, but go ahead and ask her. Maybe that'll help us.
Well, I think what Cindy proposed and what Kyle read were two different things.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? Okay, so I just think we just need to get clarity on what it is what is the motion before us.
Well,
have it be seconded, and then have a discussion.
Yeah. Because I would guess that the motion itself.
Can I interject here a minute? So there's quite a bit of echo, so I really was not able to hear the details of what you read out. Brenda, I believe you seconded my original motion. If you would take the lead on whatever is necessary from here to get to a point that's logical, I'll follow your lead.
So, could you repeat your motion for the board? This is Peter. Sorry, Cindy. Can you repeat your motion?
So my motion was that we accept the petition and proceed in a collaborative manner with our stakeholders towards rulemaking.
So it says accept the petition and proceed in a collaborative manner with stakeholders. Collaborative manner with stakeholders towards rulemaking.
So there is a motion before us, and it's been seconded. Is there any further discussion about that, questions about that?
I can't support that motion, and it's not clear to me exactly what that means, collaborative approach. I would just encourage some more discussion surrounding this.
Well, and I guess my own preference, is a preference for the not the motion, but for the concept that was put forth in option 10 that Kyle talked about and Peter talked about. But that's not a board.
Option 4.
Did I say, what did I say?
Option 10.
Are we up to option 10 yet?
We're getting there.
Option 4 o'clock.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
If Hillary could email me the text of option 4, I might be able to be more useful in this manner.
Well, yeah, it's on the table, and it'll be on the table until it's dispensed with or withdrawn. But
I guess I would amend Cindy's motion a bit to say that to further define what this collaborative approach might be. And so I'm not going to offer a formal amendment now. I'll just kind of lay out what I'm thinking, and then we can have a discussion. That it be a multi-stakeholder group that comes together to further refine what the issues are that will be brought to the board as part of the rulemaking process. Because I hear some things that are similar among the folks that have testified and what's in the petition. And I hear some pretty big differences, but I also hear people willing to collaborate. And if we can make any progress at all through that collaborative, these discussions, then it's going to make our role, our task here as the board members, a little bit easier and much clearer when we go through the rulemaking process.
So refine it to be.
I accept that modification to my motion.
Yeah, so you'll have to shorten that.
So you kind of wanted the collaborative manner to be, if I'm understanding this correctly, to be a multi-stakeholder group to further refine the issues that need to be addressed by the board. Is that fair?
I have a little bit different take in that I do believe there should be a process so that stakeholders can provide input and the petitioners can clarify their intention and what they would like to see as a result. I'm not excited about having the word collaboration in there because of my prior comment about the tribal nature of all of this. I don't think we're seeing a real opportunity for successful collaboration in the near future. So I would prefer to be, I don't care whether it's in the, in terms of what we put exactly into the motion. I'm really in favor of number four and just want to be on the record with our various comments that would help guide staff going forward.
Yeah, and based on the briefing and information that was made available to me, I would lean towards the option four that Director Abraham read to us just recently.
Could someone please email that to me so I can see what option four is?
I think it's on its way.
Does it, Mr. Chair, does it make sense to take a short recess so she can have that and she's in front of her? I'm not.
Take 10.
10-minute break.
10 minutes. 10-minute break. Cindy, are you back on the phone? Do we know if Cindy is connected here?
My phone's still connected.
Okay, you're connected. So you got the language, right?
That's right, I did. And I sent back to Hillary a suggested revision of my motion.
Okay. So I guess the question is, you want to press with your motion as an amended motion?
Can either go as an amended motion or I can just withdraw it and offer a new one. Basically, I liked everything except the title that was given to option four.
Well, I think I can suggest something. If you withdraw your motion, and then I anticipate a motion on option four, and then people can propose amendments to that. Would you mind if we proceeded in that way?
If you don't mind, I prefer to. Okay. Offer and substitute my revised language for four. Yeah, I think Hillary's got that, so it could probably go up.
And okay, so I guess we have that now. So hang on just a second.
Yes.
And I guess I want to make sure that Brenda is okay with the modification. She's the second. Yeah, okay.
Accept the petition and proceed to rulemaking related to resource site protection rules for coho salmon described in ORS 527.710. To address the requirements under 527.710 sub 3 sub A, the board directs the department to conduct rulemaking to define resource site parenthetic S for coho salmon. The board also directs the department to evaluate all other obligations under 527.710.3 in the context of the board's previous and current work and current stream classification and stream protection strategies.
So you'll notice in the body of what wasn't an option four, the only thing that I have changed is to add the F after sites for the potential that there may be more than one site. And then the title of it I changed to accept the petition, comma, direct the department to conduct rulemaking to define resource sites for coho salmon.
So what my understanding is, she was explaining the differences she's made from what Kyle Abraham read as option four, and the differences from the motion option four was really a change to drop the better aligned water protection site resource rule. So changing the title of the option, and then in the body of the real motion, which is accept the petition, she changed that. She just changed to make resource site or sites, so that perhaps there is more than one resource site for coho. Those are the changes that she's she would like to propose that motion now. That's what I think. Did I state that correctly, Cindy?
Yes, that's right.
I don't understand better aligned water protection and resource site protection rules. What's the intent there?
That was removed. That was in the original.
No, but in the except there. I think the question is that maybe you're.
Go ahead.
Now, the reason I removed that gets back to my sort of original question for clarification. I haven't seen any information to indicate that there is a problem with alignment, and it didn't look to me like there was anything really in the text of the motion of option four that specifically addressed the alignment question. So it seems strange to me to have that alignment phrase in the title of the option.
So can I just ask then, is the substantive differences between what Cindy has modified her motion with option four from a department staff perspective?
Yeah, the only substantive part, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle, is changing resource site to resource site parenthetic S, close parenthet.
Correct. Yep.
Is that, in your view, a substantive?
I don't think so. I mean, we have.
It could see.
The only substantive thing I saw really was in the title, not in the motion itself.
Yeah.
It
could test the idea of whether the stakeholders could reach a collaborative decision on what the resource site is or sites.
We've gotten advice from legal counsel. Do we want to move back in the executive session and discuss what's being proposed here and get advice from council?
If that's the will of the board, I'm certainly happy.
Sure with the issue.
Yeah.
We're functionally throwing out a portion of, I mean, what you're being proposed in this motion is functionally changing what was originally proposed and we talked about.
Well, that's what I'm trying to understand. It sounded like this is the same as option four. That's why I was asking the question, what's the difference between this and option four?
Do you have an opinion on that, Kyle?
I can offer something. So the intent of option number three originally was for the department to go through a process in rulemaking to connect the specified resource sites to the water protection rules. But one of Cindy's earlier questions, and I think I just now got it, was that the issue is that the resource site has not been defined for COHO in specified resource site division. So the intent was to be able to go through a rulemaking process to do that. If that carries over or not into option number four, I believe the intent could still be the same process if we have that stakeholder engagement. That could still be one of the outcomes of that discussion. So,
I mean, in my opinion right now, it's less about defining the process and the change in the title.
Does that if you're asking my opinion, I don't think that substantially changes what the intent of option number four is.
So the way Cindy has revised the words in the title and then this addition of the parenthetical S, you don't think is a substantive change, A, and B, you're not even questioning that to want to get further feedback from Matt.
That's up to you guys. I'm just, I offered my opinion.
Chair, I'm
so perhaps I have a question given the...
Cindy, hold off for a second. We're going to hear from council on this. Okay,
yep.
Chair Imason, members of the board, Forrester Darty, Matt DeVore from the Department of Justice. I don't believe that those changes would change any of the advice or conclusions that we've discussed before.
So there is an amended motion,
which everybody has had the opportunity to see now. Any further questions?
So I have one question based upon the conversations that you all had because of the change that I did, and that is the last sentence in the original option four that I retained in my motion to me just said that we're going to proceed with our rulemaking to define resource sites for coho salmon with an awareness of everything else we do in the context of all the other stuff we've done. If that has more meaning to you relative to a process than is apparent to me in the bare words, let me know what it is.
Thanks.
Okay. So, motion on the table.
I'd like to make just one comment before we move to a vote, since it appears, you know, that we're going to accept the petition. I just want to make sure that everybody understands, you know, from my point of view, and I believe this is probably shared by all board members, that accepting the petition does not mean that I think any of us are accepting every claim in the petition. I just want to be on the record on that.
Okay, so all those in favor, agree?
Before we get a vote, could I get an answer to my question on that last sentence?
Who were you asking the question? I didn't hear you.
Yeah, so I was asking the question, since you brought counsel to table, I have to assume that there is some specific meaning to the last sentence. I just want to make sure I'm not misunderstanding what is intended by that last sentence.
Cindy, no. I think it's just a problem with the communication. The question was related, did the change to sites change any of the advice that had been discussed previously? And the answer was no. I don't think there was any question about the second sentence among board members in the room. Am I correct?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Joe. I guess before a vote, I just want to. I'm a no vote. I object to the process of accepting this petition and moving forward with this and driving this process in this manner. I'm uneasy about the direction this puts this board and this department in relation to that. And so I want to make sure that that's heard loud and clear, and also I agree with what Jim said, in relation to what this means. So thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. And all those in favor of the amendment motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
No.
No.
No. Okay. Motion carries. Thank you, everybody. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
It occurs to me, and there really were some great points made here, both by the testimony as well as the board members, that proceeding down the path of a species by species approach with petition after petition is not very efficient, and that I'd really encourage the board to think about a different way of ensuring resource protection for multiple species over larger areas over time in the future.
Thank you.